getting rid of us that easy.
There's an evil on these seas that even the most staunch and bloodthirsty pirates have come to fear.
Brooklyn's John B. Lightning.
The Internet's best radio. 11L Radio New York International.
Dang Internet.
I'm the overtime man, girl. We're his little star, mind again. Lord, I'm the overtime man. And I don't mind putting extra hours in. Lord, yeah.
That's right, I don't mind putting extra time in. Now, big guy, see, you got me going there. You actually posed an interesting question to me, yeah. and of course, you didn't even realize that. Will you pot that down, Robin, please? Now, say, you know, like some people, you know, growing up, kids often masturbate in, like, socks or something like that. Unless you found that silk skirt in the hamper and said, wow, this feels a lot better on my dick than a nasty old wool sock. Now, all right, I say now, for example, you have a personal favorite garment that you use for that purpose. Should you, of course, need to engage in that purpose, and any married men out there telling me that they never engage in masturbation are bullshitting me, okay? And you're bullshitting your friends and everybody else and yourself. Stop. Stop already. We know better and you know better, so don't try to fool us, all right? If you have that favorite article of clothing that you use for that purpose, and you are soiling it with your seed, what's the rush to get it washed up? why would there be any particular need to, on a regular basis, get it down to the local dry cleaner to try and do the impossible, which is get semen out of certain fabrics? It's virtually impossible. Let me tell you, I have ruined a couple of lovely dresses.
Come on, I don't want to hear about that.
Why the need when all you're doing is re-soiling with your very own bodily fluids?
I was getting ready to say it. Maybe because it smells horrible after a while, and you know,
right?
You got a gentle, nice piece of silk and something, you know, a lady's underwear, lacy and stuff. And it's not.
Wait a minute! I got to go masturbate.
Yeah. And you got all that, and meanwhile, you've got all this dried semen on it that's hard as a rock. What you've lost. The feel that you originally had.
Well, then
you
it has
have,
to go in.
You have to.
Yeah, then I would understand. Yeah. But you see, if it's your own smegma, if it's your own fluids, you know, you're unlikely to suffer any feelings of distastefulness for what your own body has produced. And your smell is your smell. It's much like the homeless guys on the subway that haven't been in close proximity to soap and water in perhaps some cases many, many months, if not years. They become rather accustomed to their smell.
Yeah,
so you become accustomed to your own smell. Indeed, you might lift up that piece of silk and satin and go, oh my God, I love the smell of my own smegma. And next thing you know, you're masturbating furiously. Mike the Joke Man just left the studio.
you're weird, man.
What? Nobody else discusses these things. Because think about it. If you had such a garment, would you be regularly getting it out to the dry cleaner? And second of all, what the fuck do you think the dry cleaner would think of receiving this garment after 6 months is up? Would be best to toss it and go out and buy a new one.
I would use something basically washable and toss it in the machine. Or better yet, I would just go right to the sink while it was still damp so the stain wouldn't be there. And, you know, keep it fresh, you know? Soap and water, a little ivory soap.
Come on, most of the time, most of the time, particularly when you're my age, say, for example, and I'm not saying I do this.
Mind you.
Sure, you don't. Right,
let's say I've just dumped a load in this alleged, supposed short black satin dress. Now, the first thing that happens when you
were you wearing at the time?
No, the first thing I was wearing a nice short red number. I say you just deposited that load. All right, now if you're in my age group, 50 upper something, all right, chances are the next thing you're going to do is the following. You're going to lay back, and within minutes, you're going to be out cold, and you're going to be catching up on a little sleep, because at our age, you tend to need it.
Yeah.
Therefore, the last thing you're going to do is be interested in cleaning up. You're not going to be interested in cleaning up. So that sperm, that smegma, that seed is going to harden and settle in there till next time when you might add another layer or two to it.
Okay.
These are just facts. Who out there would possibly call up or email stating anything else? Although, of course, like you might have your own favorite garments to do that. And let's face it, if you're not married or if you're not married or you don't have a significant other at some time, most people I know that are married and have significant others are still quite often taking things into their own hands because being married, of course, is no guarantee of sex. Indeed, for most of the married people I know, it guarantees them no sex. That's why so many friends and relations and people I work with to have gumads on the side. I had this one boss throughout the years, all he ever complains about, Jesus, it's been six months now. Does your wife find you that disgusting, that depressing? Do you turn her off to that extent that only once every 6 months will she part her Red Sea? Well, at least if it's that time of month. Now, come on!
No.
Will she open up for you and say, okay, I'm going to let you in because I'm sick of hearing your shit. Not to mention, you know, like, I need some new jewelry. That's it. Otherwise, for the most, I know people that go months and months and months and months without receiving any relief from their partner. And yes, it's always guys, mainly because, you know, I hang out with guys, and for the most part, you know, the people I know are guys, and chicks never discuss this stuff anyway, except between themselves. Between
exactly.
themselves, they'll discuss it all the time. But we'll never get to hear much about it. Not that we really, well, yeah, we are kind of curious. At least I know I'm kind of curious. But these are facts. They're sustainable. This is actually the way it is for most men. Most men have a need to relieve themselves at the very least occasionally, if not regularly, X number of times a week. And anybody that tells you otherwise is just trying to avoid getting you thinking about the fact that they're doing that. Because most people I know, just the thought of them having any kind of sex, even with themselves, is like an ew moment.
How do we get off on this topic from talking about pride?
Gotcha.
Did I do this to myself tonight? Just some kind of stupid little mistake that I made where I was just like rambling on about something. I get rambunctious sometimes, and I go off and I fantasize about the way life should be, and then when I try and come back to reality, I discuss things about my reality that you might find disgusting. But if you do, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? What's your problem? Particularly when earlier in the show I was discussing Mike Huckabee and his statements about how, you know, how every fertilized egg is special. From the moment of fertilization, it becomes a person. Well, that's a crock of you know what. And if that's true, then if a Huckabee was enshrined into some office, into some real power or position, would he not at some point then begin working on the law or working over the law to try and see to it that every sperm is sacred? Why not? Why not? If every egg is sacred, why not every sperm? It's a significant part of the equation, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Therefore, when the fertilization process begins, when that child is brought to full term and emerges out into the world, would we now consider that person to be 9 months old? Would that be the case? Huh? Every sperm, every egg is sacred. Where in the good book have you ever read that? That's why these people are crazy. What's the matter, Michael? That's right.
They're just thinking Monty Python.
There you go.
Yeah.
Do child support payments start the morning after now, folks? Is having sex with a pregnant woman child abuse? If a woman is abusive of her body during pregnancy and the fetus doesn't come to term, like you said earlier, big guy, what is it? Murder one, right? Do we bring her up on a murder rap? How silly do we need to get?
I was thinking
of, how do you like the way I got out of that situation there with masturbation, huh?
Yeah. No, I was thinking,
thank you. I took pride in that.
Yeah.
Well,
no, I'm thinking of something else. If that's true, if you know he has his way there, and every egg's a person. Wait a second. That means the mother, since the egg cannot exist, cannot develop outside the mother.
Right.
All right. Has to be therefore totally exonerated of any crime that she may have.
Crime.
Because
crime.
Yeah, because basically, if she's got to be, say, murder somebody and has to be executed, they'd be executing an innocent person, too. Just think about that.
Well,
just some woman on death row, all she has to do is get a guard to get her pregnant and just keep getting pregnant,
That could be right.
That's right.
Yeah. That's a very good point, actually. That's right. How do you put it to that? Of course, well, the state would obviously make exceptions in those cases and perform an abortion.
Probably.
He'd find some reason to get around that, particularly because, jailhouse kids or something. I don't know. There would be some reason beyond that. And believe me, I wasn't trying to do the religious show earlier today, because it seems so much of what aggravates me about life and what seems suspicious and odd to me about life centers around, invariably, incontrovertibly, around people's religious beliefs. But there's no way to get past the craziness of these fundamentalist whack jobs such as Mr. Huckabee, who likes to come across as every man, just a regular old guy. And he does, except when he starts expounding upon bullshit like making every egg sacred. It cracks me up about these dumb pro-lifers. And abortion has been around since, would you believe, well before the time of Jesus?
Of course.
I read somewhere that there were herbal methods of terminating pregnancies. During Jesus' time, abortion was a downright common practice in Judea. Yet, once again, go back and read your New Testament. When did Jesus ever comment upon abortion? When did Jesus ever make any comments about abortion or masturbation or any of that? I don't believe you can find the one. Back in the day of JC, abortion actually, a lot of people saw it as a good thing. Kept the population down. You had too many people. You didn't have enough food and water. Great. Abortion was cool. It kept people from dying of starvation. Forget when does human life begin, when does intelligence begin, which Schmuckabee, I don't think it ever begins. There were people back in that day, there was a Roman physician, actually he was a Greek physician back in the second century, named Serranus, who recommended abortion in cases involving health complications, also emotional immaturity. And he provided detailed suggestions in his work on gynecology. He was one of the early masters in that field. He described abortion methods. He advised against, like, the use of sharp instruments to induce miscarriage, because, you know, like, women might perforate some significant body parts. And he advised women wishing to abort their pregnancies to engage in energetic walking, carrying heavy objects, riding animals, and jumping, so that the woman's heels were to touch her buttocks with each jump, which he described as the Lacedaemonian leap.
Well, they say a pregnant woman should never strain herself, and exactly what he's doing. He said, you strain yourself, you won't carry.
But here was a guy that was performing and issuing information on how people could commit abortions back in the day of original formula Jesus Christ. Yet somehow the Jesus Christists of today have invented this every bit of life, every life form is sacred nonsense, balderdash, pure baloney.
But like we always said, we know that in the early church, they threw out certain books and records, gospels of other apostles. They were written later. Now, so the authenticity, they just questioned. It could have been legitimate that they were really written from memories of some previous saint, follower, whatever. Okay, epistles. But they said, no, we'll throw this out because we don't like what this says. That's basically what happened. So that's why religion came that way. And I've always said, when you have a religion, in order to continue on, has to have its members procreate.
Oh, without a doubt.
Exactly.
Of course.
You know.
Which I assume is the main prohibition some of these people, I got it right there.
Yeah, you got it.
Feel about gayness, you know, about the threat that homosexuality is to the procreation of more potential members of their idiot religion. And I did say idiot religion, but it's all about words.
And abortion, of course, obviously.
Indeed. It's all ultimately comes down to words. Words such as the ones you are hopefully hearing now at various sundry locations. I don't know. We have to make a call. I got to check in. I haven't gotten a phone update now in 2 weeks. I don't even know if we... I hope the phone service is still up and working. Thank you, William, because it's brought lots of extra listeners to the table. And if they're not out there listening tonight, then what the hell am I bupping for a relative handful of people still listening on the internet? You know, not that... By the way, how were the numbers tonight? Should I ask on the air? Oh, you're giving me that look of like they weren't that hot.
Just a little below normal. Last week, they were above normal. They were a little below
normal. I don't know
what
the fuck's wrong with you people. I'm telling you. Keep giving them great radio, and they keep walking away. It's words. I'm not particularly upset with you. I just loathe and despise and detest most all of you there. Because what I do is all word-oriented. Hopefully, occasionally, I'll even come up with words that'll mobilize the inactive to get up, to get involved. You know, because some people, you know, I have one friend of mine, every time he opens his mouth, he takes foot. He can't get it right. No matter what he says, it's always an error. It's always wrong. But this week, I don't even know how I stumbled across it. I stumbled across a brief essay by somebody by the name of Ernest Partridge, who wrote the following paragraph. Well, actually, he wrote a bit more than that, but I'm going to read this one paragraph that he wrote about words. Words can be a window into the soul and the intellect of a leader. Those leaders who speak well and write well also think well. To be sure, most political rhetoric these days is the handiwork of speechwriters. Thus the success of Ronald Reagan. And when dimwit politicians stray from their teleprompter, we learn more than we'd like to about their smarts. Witness, or is that nitwitless?
Yes.
George W. Bush. You're working hard to put food on your family. Is our children learning? Fool me twice. What was the one he stated this week? Oh, God, he came out with another classic Bushism this week. Problem was, I couldn't find it. I'm looking through all the notes here to see if I can find it. It was similar to the food on the family one day. I think it was something like, he said something about putting money on the table. Some typically inane Bushism. You know what? Ernest Partridge had it right. Game, set, and match, Mr. Partridge. When compared to the illiterate in chief, it's no wonder that people love Obama.
Make sure that you know that I will wake up every single day while I'm in the White House.
Yep.
Trying to make your lives a little bit better.
Oh, baloney.
More importantly, your children and your grandchildren's lives a little bit better.
Oh, baloney. Now, every single day, the problems that you're going to have to deal with in the office of the presidency of the United States, you're going to have a lot more to concern yourself with than the problems of the average American every day. Stop lying to us already, Obama. You're showing your Hillary side.
Well, they all got to say that to get elected. Come on.
I know, but come on. I shouldn't have to hear that from him, particularly if he's as literate as we have made him out to be.
You know, you were talking about all these Bushisms. His problem, okay, my problem, because you catch me in this, is that trying to get the brain working in one direction and speaking out something that I had already thought about at the same time is hard.
Yeah, I just heard that.
Okay. In other words, I'm not saying exactly what I think at the same time.
Well, then we don't need you here.
I'm running half a second. I'm trying to run half a second staying ahead of myself.
No, you got to be more than that. You've got to be like, you know, on the average, pally.
About 30, man.
Seconds ahead.
Just, all right, but you get the idea. You do it.
You have insufficient memory.
Okay.
There, you know?
I don't do
You're
it that well.
You're not buffering, right?
All right. Yeah, that's right. I don't do it that well. The point is that with more experience.
What the hell are you doing here?
All right, with more experience, you get better at it. And George Bush is out there. George W. is out there every goddamn day.
This isn't
and he still can't get his brain in sync with
this
his
isn't a training camp for you, however. George W. Bush is mentally incapable of reaching
yes,
that
what
point.
I mean,
on the
wrong.
Other hand, you know, Obama is clearly in the major leagues when it comes to speechifying
that's
people.
Right.
And Bush cannot get around on the rhetorical slow ball underhand pitch that's thrown in by a 5-fucking-year-old. No matter what the reporter says to him, he's going to come back with something stupid. And I have spent some time the last couple of weeks studying the unscripted Obama with ever-increasing scrutiny because, you know, for the most part, his speeches are great because, hey, somebody's writing his speeches for him, too, or at least helping him write them. And as I am one who writes daily to put my best thoughts and most cogent arguments forward, I'm acutely aware how easy it is to motivate people, to dazzle people with words when you've had the opportunity to sit down and write them out, and they're well thought out. And as pointed out here by Mr. Partridge, they've generally been written out by others. Politicians speak words that have been prepared for them by specialists, by professional speech writers who are employed to best articulate their positions in a pleasing manner. That's what it comes down
to.
That's
exactly what we were talking about. But you see, you and I, what he was saying is when they don't look at the prompter, when they speak extemporaneously, you have to have the gift of doing that. I never did. I never learned how to do it right.
Then again, what are you doing here?
But at least I try. The point is,
trying don't cut it, Pally. Yeah. Come back to us in about 10 or 20 years when you've got it together.
Screw you. But GW has never learned to speak extemporaneously.
I don't know.
There's got to be a problem.
I'm
going
to seek to it.
Here.
Ah, Mr. St. John is going to take care of you.
Ow! I mean, there's got to be something wrong with him. You know, he can't learn to do this? He's a freaking president!
There's any doubt that there's something wrong with him? There's never been a one. But I've noticed when speaking extemporaneously, Obama falls back on the same semantic stilts a lot of us do. Not much so as you'll hear him humming and whoring, you know, you know.
Well, we all do that.
But most of us try and keep those tics as in line as we can, particularly when we're speaking live. But when he is speaking extemporaneously, as per his debate performances, you can hear a more average Obama. To me, at least, he seems far less impressive when he's not falling back on pre-prepared stock answers that he has at the ready, that he's been training for, that, you know, he's been groomed. All right, remember, if this question is asked, this is the way you reply. When you don't have a prepared, pre-planned written response in front of you or ingrained into your memory, then you start coming across as more real. And unfortunately, in the case of just about every politician, they sound far less articulate under such circumstances.
See, that's where Hillary, I think, has the advantage. Hillary and Bill both do this, and so I think they're trained this way.
Yeah.
You ask them a question that's off the wall or not on the exact topic, and there's a little half a second, maybe a three-quarter second pause as their brain goes in gear, and they figure out how to turn a stock answer into the real, the answer they want.
Well, you just have to be adept enough to be fast enough on your feet to swing around the words, to change things around. Once again, that ability to go extemporaneous, if you don't have that, you have to get out of the broadcast business.
Yeah.
And believe me, this show, some major portions of this show are pre-programmed and planned down to the last bleeding word. Yet we can go extemporaneous for hours or days at a time if we have to. That's part and parcel of being able to do this. Or you shouldn't be able to do it. Obama does it relatively well, but compared to the president whose Bush speak has come to be defined as extreme inarticulation in action, Obama comes across like a sizable intellect in comparison, simply because he speaks relatively well. And it does say much about the man, because somebody that's good with words, you could pretty much draw the conclusion that this is a thinking person. This is somebody, at the very least, that can think cogently and clearly, which is kind of important. But that's not only Obama's sole purview. Hillary does relatively well. You know, listening to the last debate, I thought she actually articulated most of her positions better than he did. Not that necessarily her answers were better or her plans and programs and ideas were better, but she articulated her views really well, and yet somehow all the professional pundits still managed to award Barack another victory. And keep in mind, I'm the guy that's been saying repeatedly, like for years now, that I could not vote for Hillary under any circumstances, such as my distrust and my distaste for her.
Well, like I'm saying, she has everything prepared. She has more preparation. And if someone, like I said, asks a question about her right foot, she'll just manage to turn it around to a stock answer about her left foot. All right? This is what I mean.
I got to get out of here.
You know, poured out starboard home, you know, posh, and that's what it means. She manages to do, you know, she manages to twist it around.
I'm going to hurt myself. Anybody got a sharp object nearby? Just send one over this way.
Can I sit on you, maybe?
That'll do. Look, I've long been easily smitten by wordsmiths. Anybody that displays an estimable, I can never pronounce that word, anybody that's good with public speaking, anybody that has finely honed debating skills, I'm probably going to fall in love, you know. And that's part of the reason, and maybe the sum total whole reason, why I like Obama, even though I still don't know just where the fuck he stands in just about anything. You know, now I have to go to the website to figure that out. All the rest is just bup, 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 you know, nice fuzzy, indeed fuzzy yet very, very dressy words. You know, very, very fancy words he uses. And yeah, that will seduce me, but it's going to take more than words to convince me that he's the savior that so many are perhaps too willing to see as such, because it seems the media, at the very least, has anointed Barack Obama as the handy maiden of change. Hillary couldn't possibly do it. She's old school. She represents the 90s, man. What's been, what we've been through, and what a lot of people don't want to go back to. Now, before I get out of here and make it seem as though I'm ignoring John McCain, he is wholly outmatched in the rhetorical arena by this new kid on the chopping block, not to mention Hillary. He's really, when it comes to public speaking, he's incredibly average, barely adequate. McCain, he's a bland, boring speaker. He's uninspiring. I've never heard him give a speech where, you know, where you felt like, oh, that's so uplifting. No, he's a yawn-inducing reciter of tepid, safe, parsed scripting that offers nothing new. And I certainly haven't heard anything from him that we have not been made sleepy-eyed by having heard hundreds of times before by hundreds of different politicians who basically fall back on the same pious platitudes to get by. He reads the same hackneyed bloviation blandishments of hack writers for the middle brow from the middle ground because he likes staying to the middle of the road. You know, nothing that would get one that's on the political fence off that fence to throw in his lot with John McCain. Nothing he says, I think, would bring a person to say, holy shit, you know, he's right. I'm going to vote for him. No, he's just too bland, too boring. And when extemporaneizing, is that a new word? He brings nothing special to the arena. His public appearances are really just, you know, Barack is selling out soccer stadiums and hockey arenas. McCain, he's got minimal speaking skills. And therefore, he's lucky to draw anything more than a minimal crowd. He's not going to inspire people, particularly Republicans, to rush out on Election Day to vote for him. And that's going to be part of his problem. I mean, keep it in mind, this is the man who answered one question about the war in Iraq with his now infamous rewrite of a Beach Boys lyric when he was intoning, bomb, bomb, Iran. You know, yeah, clever, clever, clever the man is not. And a great public speaker the man is not. So there you go. I'm spent. I don't have another fucking thing to say.
No, I think one thing you did mention, you said if someone could speak you know, public speaking was excellent. Public speaking, speak extemporaneously, you'd fall in love with him.
Yeah, I tend to do that. But it's only natural. It's innate in me because somebody that speaks well is inspiring to me because I do public speaking.
Then why didn't you have a gay marriage with William F. Buckley?
Who I thank you for mentioning.
Yes,
because
I knew you forgot him.
We failed to even mention his passing this week, and among. What was he, like 82, 84, and 106?
Something like that, 80.
As conservative columnists and thinkers go, he was truly, indeed, without a doubt, one of the greats. A pragmatic person who always was ahead of the curve, who was not in many ways a textbook conservative, although he sure started out as such. Some of the statements he made in his early days... crazy person, but he was also capable of great critical thought. He had the analytical abilities to see past issues, to parse words in ways that were interesting. And of course, if anybody ever got you up on a regular basis to go to the dictionary to figure out what the fuck that last word meant, it was William F. Buckley.
Remember, he was born rich. He loved being rich.
Well, what does being rich have to do with it?
Well, no, he got the education. So he got the education, and he had the power of just sitting back there using his money to find his magazine.
That's the key. That's the key. Yeah, I guess he founded the National Review, did he not?
Yes,
and
yes.
Of course, because he was well moneyed up, he had the time to pursue conservative ideas and to promulgate them to the public. I mean, let's face it, he could have sat back and said, fuck it, I'm going to have a lazy daisy life. I'm going to sit on my haunches and do jack shit for the remainder of my life and be a closet conservative that doesn't express my views to anybody outside of immediate family and friends. But he decided that his time on this planet would be best spent promulgating those ideas, those propositions, those feelings of him to the widest possible audience. So he started his own magazine. He had, what was the program, Firing Line on TV for what seemed like forever. There's not one of us of a certain age that did not grow up watching William F. Buckley on the tube and being somewhat impressed by him, not only because he wasn't a standard stock issue conservative, but because he was a thinking man and a man that got along with it, a man that did not have this rabid hate and dislike and distrust for liberals, unlike an Ann Coulter. He got along with people of a liberal bent. Indeed, some of his best friends, yeah, I said that, were indeed true rock-ribbed so-called liberals. So William F. Buckley is to be lauded and his life's works to be applauded on many levels, although let's face it, ultimately he was a conservative, therefore I disagreed with most, if not much, of what he had to say. Probably mostly all of what he had to say, but he said it so well, how could you not enjoy it? How could you not appreciate it?
Yeah. And like you know, when you mentioned some of his comments in the beginning,
I wish I had kept that article. Some of the things he said, wow.
Woo. Yeah, but you got to realize something.
Man.
Remember, he came out of money. He had the ideas.
Here we go with the money again.
He had the ideas of big business, and it was grown. It was put into him by his family. And that was his original attitudes. And then as he got on his own, and he started getting out into the public and meeting people of other political persuasions and ideologies, that's when he became his own man and softened up to the point where he could be respected by everyone.
Well, once again, it comes back to those words I use frequently, critical thought.
Exactly.
He wasn't caught up in a system of thought that restricted or restrained his ability to think outside the box.
Exactly.
I hate that one, but that's what he did. As conservative thinkers go, he was hardly radical, but he was hardly the type of conservative thinker to step directly in line with all the other conservatives who often found themselves questioning what he had to say and wondering, what the fuck is Bill up to here? Not to mention, he apparently died in the saddle, so to speak. He was at his desk writing another column or something when he, I was going to say, sadly passed away. Why do we always have a need to say that? He sadly passed away. He died. He dropped dead. Yeah, it's sad for anybody
sad for
and everybody
us.
That
yeah.
enjoyed his work and all that, but he died. He died on the job. This is a guy who wrote I read 44, 45 books, and prolific is certainly another word that you could ascribe to Bill Buckley. But he did good work for conservatives and for the rest of us. It really didn't matter that much, except once again, decent guy, nice guy, and I probably learned more than a few words reading his columns over the years. So thank you, Bill. All right, gentlemen, any last words so we could get the hell out of here until we reconvene next week and make a phone call? I have no idea. I have no idea if we're even using the phone service the last couple of weeks. I sure hope so, because the quality of the programming has been far too high.
Now, oh, yes.
I just hate to, you know, like turn out like a, well, I'll turn out shit programming if nobody's listening, because then there's nobody out there to care. Michael? Hi. By the way, thank you for being so involved in the last half hour of the show that you've been out there surfing the internet instead of being anywhere near the microphone to offer some comments. Not that they'd be cogent.
If I do it later, then the two of you mull around saying, we're waiting for you.
Yeah, but this is the overtime portion of the show is like the true open mic segment, when I encourage you guys to do a lot more speaking, and all you've done is diddle around on the fucking internet.
Open mic, close mouth.
As soon as I open my mouth, I set the proceedings back an hour and a half.
That's so true. Go back to your internet. Yeah. Okay, big guy?
Nothing more. It's been a great day. I really enjoyed the show. I enjoyed the show.
Thank you.
You didn't berate me, so I have no grudges against you tonight.
That's true. Okay, and attend to your phone duties over there, Mr. Joke Man. Normally all I get out of this person is like a...
Whatever.
You know, but at least we didn't get that here tonight, or I didn't get a... the kind of sounds that people normally make when listening to this show. I want to thank you once and all again for being a part of the extravaganza. I want to thank each and every one of you tonight that did not call in, because it made for a better show. Although, remember, when I do request telephonic input, I expect a shitload of it. Yes, Michael?
Can I give a personal message over the airwaves computer waves?
Yeah, the computer waves.
Yes. Hey, Rufus, fuck you.
I don't know what that was all about, but
I guess that's him on the phone.
He knows I love him.
I was hoping the numbers were coming in. So don't forget the every show archive for your perusal to download, even at our website, johnlightning.com. johnlightning.com. There are lots of other quality programmers on the air on johnlightning.com other days of the week. Every Friday, of course, Hank and Jim are there doing their thing, and I hear now even on the occasional they were on Saturday night.
Well, it was like a throw on, but it's Tuesday night.
Pay attention over there. It might be him again, and if it is, tell him, like, you know, we'll ban him if he keeps his shit up.
Tuesdays and Friday nights, and also now overnights between 1 and 5 a.m., Monday through Friday.
What the fuck's wrong with those guys? I'm glad to hear they're
making
they're,
money on it, believing.
Okay, well, that's... Damn, there I go.
From Bill, we had the guy you haven't heard from.
Now I'm moving from pride to jealousy, folks. I will never. Will I ever make a lousy dollar doing this? That's right. Rufus, we love you, but you know, you call in one more time harassing my guy here, and you'll become persona non grata for a couple of weeks. And think of how much our audience will miss your calls. There you go. JohnLightning.com is our website. The email address, and I will be looking at the end of the night and hoping and not praying for your email input, because it really is important. I want to know, what do you think? And most of the email I got this week, you know, and the ones regarding, you know, we missed the phone calls. Hey, look, when I mention phone calls, even when I play the phone call ID, nobody called. And that's not my fault. And as I said to one of our dear listeners, Howard Stern, when he gets a really shitty phone call, he makes fun of them and he makes it into great shtick. I'm sorry, you can't turn shit into gold most of the
time. That's right.
You can't do it. There are only so many times when you can take the same basic call from the same phone caller and make fun of him before, if you're in my position, you're thinking what I often think, which is, I'm bored. And if I'm bored by a phone call, I would tend to think that you are too. And I want to keep you from being bored. You know, we're only here 3 hours a week. We only get to spend 3 hours a week with you. I want to make every one of those hours as precious as every one of those eggs fertilized or not. Want to make that the case for you. So johnlightning.com, one last time, that's the website. And if you want to communicate by email, I encourage you to, because I do read them. And for most of you, I will get back to you. And I'd like to hear what you have to say. I appreciate the, hey, Johnny, great shows. But if there's particular things in the course of a show that you found really entertaining or not, let us know. WBCQ Radio at AOL.com is that address you should have bookmarked in your Microsoft Outlook or whatever the fuck you use. That's WBCQ Radio at AOL.com. And we will be back here next week in all likelihood for another 3 hours on Planet Radio WBCQ and however long I care to be with you here at JohnLightning.com. Until then, thanks again and good night, y'all.